welcome to Hype, episode 18. It was only a week ago that we had our last episode, but there were some audio problems. We apologize for those. I don't know what happened, something with the computer. And with Catching Fire coming out tomorrow, or today if you live in Australia, like Marima does.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Well, yesterday night, last night.
You're the worst at time zones.
No, I'm not. It's Friday there.
Just, yeah.
So, Marima has seen Catching Fire. We're going to talk about Catching Fire. Josh has not yet, though. Sorry, Josh.
Not yet.
Ha ha. What are your plans? Did you buy your tickets yet?
No, because I'm going out of town this weekend, but I'll be seeing it ASAP.
Oh, okay. Excellent, excellent. I'm seeing it tonight, too, with my $65 ticket.
Oh, yeah, your free beer.
Wine.
Yeah.
This is why we're not recording tomorrow, because I'm going to be so hungover from the Capitol bash.
You'll be unconscious still.
No, I'm going to be responsible. Anyway, Marima, let's hear your thoughts about Catching Fire. I follow you on Twitter. I know you loved it.
Oh, Andrew Sims follows me on Twitter. It was so good. I can't even, like, I'm having a trouble describing it. I really liked the first movie, I have to say. So, like, I had high expectations going into this because all of the things that we've seen just looks like it was going to be even better. And it was even better. It was so good. It was, I would say it's definitely one of the best adaptations I have seen, in that it was really true to the message of the book. And I felt like a lot of the things that they couldn't do in the book, because it was from, well, like, they couldn't show in the movie, hey, this is Katniss's thought process, but they showed it in a really great way that made a lot of sense. And it was just like, Jennifer Lawrence was fantastic. Like, I can't say enough good things about her and all the rest of the cast. It was so good. I want to go and see it again now, because I've seen it once and I've, like, had all of the, oh my God, moments. And now I need to go and see it again and actually watch the movie. Does that make sense?
No, that doesn't make sense. Because for me, with, like, any movie, especially one I'm particularly excited about, I spend the first 10 minutes being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm actually watching the movie.
Right.
And I start to focus.
that was exactly it.
So you think Catching Fire is much better than The Hunger Games, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I thought The Hunger Games was good, but I think, I mean, personally, though, I'm biased because Catching Fire is my favorite book of the trilogy.
Yeah, you know, after rereading it, I think I feel the same way. And I think one of the reasons is that all these little hints about what is actually happening that Katniss is unaware of, like all these little clues into Heavensby's loyalty and Haymitch and PETA being in, PETA was in on it. You know, just all these finally coming to light at the end, it was like such a cool twist that you didn't get in The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Even though the plots were sort of similar.
Yeah, and what was really fun as well is I went with a friend who, like, doesn't know anything about The Hunger Games. She had seen the first movie, but she couldn't really remember it, so I gave her a recap. And she didn't know anything about Catching Fire. She hadn't seen any of the promotional material or anything. So I feel like that's always a good test of a movie, to see if a non-fan enjoys it. And she was traumatized at the end of it. She was like, oh my God, I feel like someone's going to kill me. But she was also like, that was such a good movie. And, you know, I like quizzed her. I was like, what does this mean? And what was this person doing? And she, like, totally knew everything that was going on. So I feel like that's a good kind of test to see.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's Francis Lawrence? Because a lot of people seem to like Gary Ross's Hunger Games. I mean, it got really good reviews. People are really happy with the adaptation. But then Francis Lawrence comes along and it's even better. It's like, wow, we didn't think Gary Ross could beat that much.
Well, I think maybe, I really like The Hunger Games, but Catching Fire is more visual, just the book itself. Like, the arena in Catching Fire is way more exciting than the forest in The Hunger Games. So, first of all, it looks better, and the Capitol is more over the top, so, like, everything looks better there. But I also think, I don't know, I felt like they were well connected. You could see that it wasn't like Harry Potter, where there was such a strong disconnect between the directors. So that was nice. It's not like going from Chamber of Secrets to Prisoner of Azkaban, which gives you whiplash.
Right. One of the greatest parts, one of the smartest ideas they had was using the IMAX camera in the actual games. So for the if you go to an IMAX theater to see this movie, which I do recommend for the for this reason I'm about to explain, as soon as Katniss enters the game, the screen opens up height-wise. It actually gets taller. And that's because they filmed with IMAX cameras, and they get that taller, larger picture for IMAX screens. And the way they marketed it when they were talking about using it, they said, you know, you enter the arena with Katniss, and both you and her have this new perspective on the world because it's an unknown territory. So you have like this wider view because you've never seen it before. And it really works great because as soon as the game starts, a few minutes later, they're running into the forest. And the taller screen lends itself to the forest so much because of these tall trees. It was such a cool idea. But then at the towards the end of the movie, because you're in the arena. Yeah, you're in the arena for like 50 minutes and then it shrinks back down. And you're like, whoa, wait, can you keep it back? Can you open it back up? I got used to that.
The same thing happened in the last Batman film. They shot a lot of the stuff in IMAX, but then it would like kind of shrink back down and then go back big. And then
really?
Yeah, oh, did it?
It very
I do
weird.
Not remember yeah. that.
A lot of people won't
Well, you have
notice,
to be in an IMAX theater, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see Hunger Games. I mean, I didn't see Catching Fire in IMAX, but I saw the Batman movie in IMAX. But that like, I did a, this is an off topic, I did a marathon of it. So they played like Batman Begins and then Dark Knight.
Oh, cool.
And then Dark Knight Rises. But no, but by the time you get to the final movie, like everyone is so delusional and falling asleep. So it's, you kind of waste
well, it's
the
like
thing.
Those really wide shots you did with like the plane and the background with the mountains. You'll see it's like full screen and then it'll kind of shrink down for the like dialogue scenes and stuff.
Well, now I want to see Catching Fire in IMAX because I saw it on a big screen, but not in an IMAX.
It might
theater.
Not be as, you know, big as a deal in Catching Fire. It seems like it only happens whenever she's in the games.
Yeah, well, it's for that
and
whole
it's constant.
50 minutes.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
she's
yeah.
In
it's,
the,
it's
right,
for
exactly.
that 50 minutes, and then it goes back. So it's not a big deal. You just have to.
It's a cool concept.
Back. No, yeah, I like it for that film, especially. You know, that's a neat idea.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it worked perfectly. I thought it was worth it. Normally, I wouldn't recommend people seeing a movie in IMAX other than the whole big screen yeah. experience. But for this, like, they actually used it for something. Not to mention, they actually shot with IMAX cameras.
Yeah,
so
which
that's
is great.
Kind of rare as well.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the Rotten Tomato review of Catching Fire. Last week, we were talking about the rating. We were like, oh, it won't hold on to the 97%. Yeah, it has a 95% right now with 97 reviews, so yeah. holding really strong, really impressive.
Either they're just blocking all the bad ones, or it's actually really good.
it is really good.
Yeah.
and Merrima can be very
I'm kind
negative,
of excited
so
to see it, because I didn't love the first one, because I just felt like the shaky cam kind of got me you know, a little aggravated.
Well, there's none of that in this one.
And so I was not exactly looking forward to this, but after I saw the first trailer, I was, because I felt like it felt different, and I liked that there was a different director, and Jennifer Lawrence is awesome. So,
you know, they should really do an unrated version where you see the deaths, because in Catching Fire, to keep it PG-13, of course, they kind of covered that up. Not with shaky camera, they just sort of cut away just in time. It would be cool for Mockingjay. Or maybe they'll surprise us with Catching Fire. I doubt it, though. If they did an unrated version and you see the actual deaths, I mean, you know, that wouldn't take that much longer.
Re-release it on Halloween.
Yeah. That, I mean, people would love that.
Why?
Right?
Why would you want that? That's
well, I
terrifying.
Think it's because it's more to the books, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's more, and it's what you read in the story. So,
and it's not that it's that graphic. I mean, it's not like we don't see deaths yeah. on, you know, in films.
TV.
Yeah, or TV. Days. Yeah, TV, we see it.
I felt like that. I came out of Catching Fire feeling pretty like it was a good movie, but I was feeling pretty depressed by the time it finished. And that was with the PG version. So I don't need any more.
Yeah, it is still disturbing.
it's pretty demoralizing when you finish it. It's a great movie, but it's not a wonderful story in that sense.
Anything else we want to talk about regarding Catching Fire? How much is it going to make this weekend in the U.S.? I mean, I know it's being the estimate say around 175. Yeah. But and like I brought up on the last episode, I think there's such good word of mouth. It's it's just going to do so well. I'm going to predict 190 million.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. It's done well in foreign markets already.
Brazil.
It broke the record in Brazil. So.
Yeah, it was like triple what the first movie
It wasn't
made
a ton of money, but in you know, this grand scheme of things. In Brazil, it was, yeah, I think what Andrew said, triple what the last one was.
Statistically. Yeah. Yeah, it made like 7 million as opposed to 2.5, yeah. Which is a big deal considering it's. I also just love how these next two movies are only a year apart. It was 20 months in between Catching Fire and The Hunger Games.
It does
Games.
Feel like forever.
Time.
Yeah. Are you serious? Oh my God. Now I feel so old. I feel even older than before.
I mean, this new one's going to, these final two are going to, it's going to feel like it's going to fly by comparison.
I'm really excited for Mockingjay now.
Yeah, it'd be nice when it ramps up and then we get to see both.
Are you concerned, like me, Marima, that this one ended on a cliffhanger? It did it feel like it had a big climax to you?
It felt like a Twilight moment at the end of this.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, it's a close-up on eyes.
even
eyes.
I know that. I mean, it's meant to be kind of cliffhanger-y. It was cliffhanger. There was a cliffhanger in the book. And I feel like they finished it in a similar way. It's just, you know, like I said, in the film, you can't get Katniss's brain, like, working out exactly what this means, so you kind of see it in her eyes-ish.
But I just felt like from a movie perspective, having a big climax to satisfy the viewers, I don't know if we got that. I felt like I was left hanging.
I felt like that too, but I think that was the point.
Mm.
I feel like that was what they were trying to do, and they did that well. So you were like, wait, what happens now? Where's the next scene? And, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just concerned with Mockingjay Part 1. It's going to be a cliffhanger again, and then we get to look back on this franchise, and it's two big cliffhangers and then a third
finale. I'm like generally concerned about Mockingjay being split in two anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's
a terrible decision, but, you know, regardless.
It does feel like a terrible decision now that I think, you know, just I think they should have just three films.
Now what? Now that you've seen the first part of The Hobbit and you're like, this doesn't always work.
Oh, yeah. That definitely changed it. But no, I just think that they obviously made it for the decisions, you know, that they made it for. But
right.
Now that some time has passed, I feel like it's a bad decision.
I have to reread Mockingjay. I forget what happened. I mean,
not much.
Not much.
Well, I mean, and when we went, there was like a month where Lionsgate would announce like 2 weeks where Lionsgate was announcing all the Mockingjay castings, the new additions a couple weeks ago. And I would have to go onto the Hunger Games wiki and look up these characters. And then I was like, oh man, am I that stupid? But then I would look in the comments and people were like, Andrew, I'm glad you included these character bios because I completely forgot who these people are. And, you know, they were minor characters. It wasn't like President Coin, but it was like...
Oh, like crew and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The film crew.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
You forget. But you got to think that they're going to be major players in this Mockingjay because they're splitting it into two, so they have time to fill.
Right. Well, now I feel like I want to speculate all about where they're going to split it and,
I know.
You know, how they're going to have to stretch that out so much. And actually, I'm not totally against that because they cut quite a few things out of Catching Fire that I really enjoyed in the book, but I felt like the movie worked really well without them. So
yes, they did.
I have confidence that they can make decisions that are in line with the story, but I'm always slightly concerned when it's like extending things out versus cutting them down because then you just feel like it's padding for no real reason.
Yeah. Well, this is why in my review, I described it as a leaner, meaner games because you're right. There's about four chapters in a row that they completely cut out of the movie.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a bad thing. It didn't affect it. And you don't even notice they're missing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there was actually quite a few things in it that I didn't realize until, like, today. I was like, oh, wait, that was not in the movie. Because I haven't read Catching Fire, like, recently, a few months ago, I guess. But I think, no, it was great. I definitely want to go and see it again now so I can observe all of the things that I missed the first time because the audience was, like, being annoying. So.
Yeah. I've been wondering when I go to see it tonight, like if I should be like keeping an eye out for certain things now that I've to do a special article. Now that I'm seeing it a second time, like something you wouldn't be able to write while watching it the first time. I'll have to think about that though. Anyway, on Hypeable this week, we've been really killing it with all of our Catching Fire coverage. Not just news, but a lot of the staff are writing original articles about Catching Fire. Karen wrote the other day why being Team Gale is perfectly acceptable. And I think we have a PETA version of that article coming out as well.
These were done mostly by gunpoint from you.
You must write Catching Fire articles.
Hey, I volunteered as tribute.
Yes.
See what I did there.
Nice.
Marima, I'll be here all week.
Marima wrote a great article, 15 Jennifer Lawrence gifs
that
sum up
good.
Your feelings about Catching Fire. That was really good.
Yeah.
I wrote it before I saw it, but it was accurate, I have to say.
Oh, it's very... I read it. I was like, oh my God, this is great.
That was fun. She does great faces.
And you do great articles. We also had a piece, 10 quotes we want to see in the Catching Fire movie. We did this with Hunger Games as well, so this was a natural thing to do. And I had an interview with Jeffrey Wright, who plays BT. I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. I just published the interview yesterday. Really great guy. And he spoke about how the politics are actually nonpartisan. You can look at this film from different political perspectives and agree with it. So he talks about that. I also asked him about the way the production moved, like in terms of speed, because we remember that Gary Ross left because he thought that he didn't have enough time to shoot the film. So I said, was there that sense on set that things were moving fast? And of course, you know, he has to sell the film, so he wasn't like, yeah, they really rushed it. But he had a good answer for that. And we talked about the cornucopia scene because he's really spinning around, and I wanted to know what filming that was like. So check that out. That's on Hypeable now as well. And I'm interviewing Prim today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, fun.
What's her name? Yeah.
She was really good.
Yeah, she was good. I'm going to ask her about the new Catriss who plays Buttercup because I think that was... I want to know more. I want to know what happened, so...
I did notice that cat when I was watching it, and I was like, oh,
see?
Catriss.
See?
Going back to Jeffrey Wright, was he pretty soft-spoken in person? I've always liked him as an actor.
Yeah.
He has a unique voice, you know.
Yeah, actually, and I mentioned in my article, he picks his words very carefully.
Uh-huh.
He's very well-spoken. Yep. It was...
Now, he's an incredible actor. He's in a ton of movies that people just don't quite remember his name. You know what I mean? He's one of those actors mm-hmm. where you've seen him, you just don't quite remember his name.
Yeah, he's also had a big role on Boardwalk Empire,
yeah,
the HBO
yeah.
show. I don't watch it, but I know he's big in that. I loved him in Casino Royale. That was my first Jeffrey Wright introduction, I think.
I just watched him in Syriana with George Clooney and Matt Damon.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right, so I think that's what we have to say about Catching Fire. I'm sure on the next episode we'll get more thoughts, maybe from Josh or from Kyle, about what they thought.
I'll still be talking about it.
Yeah.
I'll actually not stop. You'll just start recording again, and I'll just still be going.
No, please, talk about it to death. And in some other movie news, we all saw Gravity. At least I hope. Did you see Marima?
Oh, sorry. Marima, I actually haven't seen it yet.
Oh.
No.
I know. It was
really
bad timing. It came out when I was doing my
exams. I'll show you.
Yeah, it hasn't actually come out here yet, except for 2017. Yeah, it's just bad timing because it came out when I was doing exams, but it's still in cinemas, so I am going to see it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
now that was a film I'd tell everyone to see it in IMAX.
Yeah, definitely. So the film's co-writer, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I interviewed him, which makes it even more sad. It's not Jonas. I mean, it's Hannes
Jonas
Quaron.
Brothers?
Yeah, the Jonas Brothers.
Wrote Gravity.
Co-wrote.
Anyway, he co-wrote Gravity, and he directed this Gravity short film, and it's from the perspective of two people up in, it's got to be up towards the North Pole. In Greenland. They're fishing, and they intercept Sandra Bullock's character's Mayday call. In that scene in the movie that you see where she's where she's calling for help down on Earth, she's trying to call NASA, but they can't reach her. So he picks it up, and anyway, I won't spoil this short film, but it's really good. It's only 7 minutes in length, and it's worth a watch, right, Josh?
It is great. Yeah, that's right.
So that's definitely worth checking out, and cool that they released it online. Warner Brothers financed it. Maybe they're going to make an Oscar run.
Yeah, I don't know. It's $100,000 for that 7-minute film. That's pretty crazy.
Really? Damn. Maybe to get the crew up there or something.
Oh, it was Iceland. That's where it was. Did we say that?
I thought it was Greenland.
Said budget in Iceland. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, they're both up north and very cold.
Yes.
There was a viral Harry Potter video this week. A little kid dressed as Harry Potter tried to hop a real train to Hogwarts in New York's Penn Station. It was
Which
fun
is
to
even
watch.
Yeah.
It was adorable.
Yeah, it was a viral video made by this YouTube channel Improv Everywhere, and they do this series where they take scenes from movies and they reenact them in real life, but the people, it's like sort of a hidden camera type thing. And so this Harry Potter one, this kid, I guess he's wearing a wig, but they got the costume perfect. He that flannel, oversized flannel shirt and the pants that he's wearing, he looks just like Harry in Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone. He's got a fake owl with him and a heart, and he's talking to people trying to...
The kid was so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just when, like, at the end where they're like, where are your parents? And he's like, unfortunately, they're dead.
Yeah, that was so sad.
Wasn't this kind of depressing because there were so many people that didn't seem to get the joke?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, my reasoning was, I wrote this in the article too, if, I guess New York, especially a place like Penn Station, that's a big transportation hub, there's a lot of culture there, and it's not like, you know, going to a movie theater and pretending to do this. It's people maybe who aren't tapped in the pop culture. I mean, that's my only guess for
why they probably get crazy questions every day. You know what I'm saying? I think that because like you said, there's so many different cultures, languages, I'm sure they get crazy questions to them every day. And so he may have just, like, I know there's a guy at the end that he's talking to that, you know, asked him about his parents. And I think this guy probably just answers the most ridiculous questions that, you know, in this train station every day.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. If it wasn't in New York, I just, like, my one experience of New York was just like, I feel like it's a city of people that just won't be fazed by anything. Like, no matter what happens, they'll just be like, nope, don't care. So it's like some kid walking around being like, do I need to check my owl?
You could tell if it was like 30 years, you know, years old or below, it was, people noticed. If it was above that, it was a little harder for them to get it.
Yeah, one guy said, my name's Ron.
Yeah, I thought that was actually weird. I don't know why. I just thought it was odd.
I thought that was great.
I guess this kid, you know, he's not a bad actor either. His British accent wasn't that great.
No, it wasn't, but he was still pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had good responses. I enjoyed it. I want to watch their other scenes now. I don't know what other ones they've done.
I watched another one. They did Gandalf with You Shall Not Pass in New York.
My God.
I watched that one, yeah.
On like a bridge in Central Park. It was pretty funny. It wasn't as good as this one, but
there's not many lines to go with that one.
Yeah, all he did was repeat You Shall Not Pass. that was the viral video
of
the week.
Did it say how old this kid was? I was curious. Because he was pretty good. I mean, he was pretty quick on his responses, you know.
Yeah, I would guess like 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Maybe. In Star Wars news, we learned the first casting announcement. R2-D2 has been cast as R2-D2. And I guess what the interesting part of this story was that there's this team of fans that make R2-D2s, functioning movie-ready R2-D2s, And Kathleen Kennedy, the Star Wars producer, discovered these guys at a recent Star Wars convention over in England, I believe, the Star Wars fan event over there. And she saw these guys and saw their R2-D2s and was like, oh, wow, this is great. So their R2-D2s, robots, are actually going to be in the movie. So this picture of J.J. Abrams, Kathleen Kennedy, and these two guys is actually of J.J. Abrams meaning their R2-D2, and they hired these guys, which is kind of cool.
That is it.
So
that is insanely cool.
Yeah. It looks great. I mean, it looks like the real thing, but... And we also learned, maybe we talked about this on the last episode, that Star Wars, yeah, we did, December 2015, so not, still have a long ways to go, and yet we still have, I mean, actually, we're basically 2 years out, we still don't know who's playing who in the movie, it seems like it.
I think will change in the next few months, like you said, we'll be changing the new year soon, so.
I hope so. We probably would have said that a few months ago, too, as well.
Yeah, you're probably right.
We'll hear about it in a couple of months.
Because it did seem like the news was ramping up, and then it kind of, everything was like completely just failed. It was all rumors.
Right. There was a news by You piece on Hypeable I wanted to talk about this week. It asked, are millennials to blame for our sequel society? This was by AKA CJ7. And he or she was writing about how we've become more and more accustomed to the sequels because he or she writes, the millennial generation is partially to blame for the sequel society vortex we find ourselves trapped in. Of all the characterizations millennials get, deserve it or not, I have found one to be decidedly true. We flipping love nostalgia. We would eat it for breakfast if it were digestible and life-sustaining. and then they pointed out how BuzzFeed does a lot of articles on nostalgia, and these are the most popular ones. People just love it. So one example he cited was Spider-Man. Now, that's not an old franchise. I mean, the two trilogies are... I think Amazing Spider-Man's going to be 4 or 5 movies.
Yeah.
That they were only like what, 10 years apart? That's nothing. So I don't are we to blame, guys? Why else do we always get these sequels and spinoffs?
Well, obviously there were sequels before millennials, so I don't think we're to blame for sequels, but obviously there's a reason that they keep making sequels for so many franchises. I don't know if you can blame us or the studios, but the studios usually make what the audiences want to watch because they don't want to lose money. So it could be true. I don't know how you prove it. Yeah.
I guess that's why he or she's saying that we're to blame. I mean, I get the other problem is that Hollywood's just sort of creatively dead.
I think that's true. I think that all the studios are afraid to try anything. You know, that's why I was so impressed with Gravity, because I thought it was, there's something they spent a ton of money on. They spent 6 years or so making it, and that's just unusual in this time of sequels. So hopefully we'll see more of that, although I doubt it. It's easier to make money with already made fan bases.
Yeah. I think that's more the point. I kind of disagree with the premise of the article. Sorry, person that wrote it. Although I really like the way that they wrote it. It's really funny. I think the point is kind of like, it's the audience that is using, like they're talking about BuzzFeed and stuff, but the audience that is using BuzzFeed is like our age. So nostalgia for us is, you know, things from the 90s or whatever. But if people that were 20 years older than us were using BuzzFeed, then the articles would be about, you know, things from their childhood or whatever. So it's just that is the target group. I think it's more like what Josh was saying. It's, you have a built-in audience and it's a safer choice, and things are more expensive. Things are so expensive to make now. And, you know, that's if you already have the built-in fan base, why try something new if you know you can already make money? It's like splitting the last film. It's the same thing, right? You already have people that are going to go and see it. If you've seen the first two movies, you're going to see the next one or whatever.
It's kind of sad, guys.
It is
kind of
sad.
It's so cynical.
But at the same time, it doesn't bother me.
No. Like, the thing is, the movies are still pretty good. That's the thing is the quality is still up. For the most part, there are sequels that have been terrible. But
Hobbit.
Most of them have been pretty good, like the Amazing Spider-Man reboot. Everybody pretty much liked that. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's a terrible idea. I'll actually harp on sequels a lot in my writing that there's just way too many sequels. But in the end, we've had some pretty good movies in the last couple of years. Just like apparently Catching Fire is great.
Yeah.
And we've done a lot of these book adaptations too. So that's been a kind of an entry into sequels. You know, we had Potter with 7 films, and so that really started off something to it.
Right, and that goes with publishing as well. Like a publisher, if they think something is going to sell, wants to sign a series. They don't want a standalone book. So that ties into, obviously, if you've got 3 books, you're going to make at least 3 films if you sell the rights to it and it does well.
And that goes back to the
Instruments.
Already have a fan base type of deal.
Yeah, exactly. They just go hand in hand, I think.
One last movie story today. Hans Zimmer jumped in on the Bat Kid extravaganza. I don't know. I don't think we spoke about this on this show. But
I think it was after.
Bat Kid was this. He was this kid in San Francisco. He asked Make-A-Wish Foundation. He wants to be Batman for a day. So Make-A-Wish teamed up with the city of San Francisco to make it happen. And he was solving crimes all around the city. It was like this really adorable thing. Everybody loved it. It was streamed online. Then we found out a couple days later that Hans Zimmer, the composer for the Batman series, wrote a special theme song just for Batkid. Apparently, it was used at some point during the day, during Batkid's day in San Francisco. We don't know when exactly, and there's still not a copy of it online, so we'll have to wait and see if it ever is released publicly. But Hans Zimmer's publicist confirmed that he did write a score for Batkid. She added that we're not sure when or how the music will be incorporated, but I do know that there are different elements and surprises being rolled out. She said that a copy will definitely be given to Miles. That was the Bat Kid, who was 5 years old. He was recovering from leukemia. And we may never see it, but it was just very cool that Hans Zimmer took some time to write a little score.
Yeah, he's always pretty good about that. I think whenever the Dark Knight Rises shooting happened, he made a song for the victims to raise money.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's done this. I don't want to say a few times to cheapen this event, but he's done this before, I believe.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. I wonder if it was like a mashup of other Batman themes with a little kid twist.
I'd be curious because, and it sounds terrible, but you probably can't use a lot of that stuff because the studio owns it. You know what I'm saying? Hans has given it to them, essentially they own the score now. So that's probably why he made his own, you know, his own score for the kid.
He's a genius, so it would be good no matter what he wrote. Like, I am such a Hans Zimmer fangirl. I love him so much.
He's pretty much the only name that anyone knows in the, you know, score business right now. At home, anyway.
Sure.
Him and John Williams.
John Williams. I have a thing for composers, what can I say?
John Williams does a two concerts here every year.
Does he still do it? Wow.
He still does it.
Isn't he in his 80s?
Oh, yeah. He's an older guy.
Are you going to one?
I went 2 years in a row. I haven't been the past couple of years. The 1 year, we lucked out because the first 45 minutes was all Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
And then, he always does the Star Wars theme. Yeah.
Does he do the Jaws theme and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. And there's like video screens, and some of them will be timed to the video screen, so you'll see like scenes from Jaws or scenes from Harry Potter. It was really well done. But the Star Wars nerds, they make their way out there every year to this. They always go. And when he does Star Wars, they all bring their lightsabers. So he'll start playing Star Wars, and they all put their lightsabers up into the sky. And it's kind of cool because it's an outdoor arena, and you just look behind you or in front of you, and all you see are all these lightsabers up in the air.
That's
amazing.
Thinking
it was like in a nice room, you know, like
No, it's this outdoor amphitheater.
They were standing up in front of everybody.
Yeah, no, they don't stand up. But it's cool because everybody, obviously, they have different colored lightsabers. Yeah. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
I think I'm going to have to come and visit when he's doing one of these shows, because that would be
a great thing to see.
You should. It was very cool.
I'll be back on your couch.
Please do. Kyle will be this weekend.
Oh.
Hopefully my couch.
Unless he doesn't set his alarm.
let's talk some TV news. Have either of you watched Broadchurch?
No.
I've seen some of it. I haven't seen it all.
Okay.
Yeah. The David Tennant, obviously. This stupid Fox thing that is starting up.
So they're doing Fox is doing a version of Broadchurch, which stars David Tennant, actually.
But
so
doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. It's like he's doing the same show two times, essentially. It is really bizarre.
Has he run out of money? Like, I don't understand what's happening.
He needs that money.
But, you know, honestly, like, I'm not complaining. I loved Broadchurch so much. I'm so excited for this U.S. version. And it just got better this week. Anna Gunn, who starred in Breaking Bad, she won an Emmy, thank you, for her role. I was about to say Oscar. She won an Emmy for her role as Skyler in Breaking Bad. She's going to star opposite him, the detective. They both play detectives, David Tennant and Anna Gunn, in this new show, which is called Grace Point. They're changing the name.
Oh, I didn't see that. That makes it worse.
You read these character descriptions, and it sounds exactly like Broadchurch, which is not totally a surprise, but you have to wonder, are they going to mix it up?
Yeah,
is it
going to
be the same plot twist?
Right. Is it going to be the same person? Is it like...
Right. It's a murder mystery. So is it the same person who committed the crime? I'm hoping not, because you want to surprise all the people who watch Broadchurch. It did air in America. It aired on BBC America.
It's perplexing to me, this entire situation. I can't quite wrap my head around it.
This is part of Fox's limited engagement. They're doing a series of limited engagement shows, including the return of 24. So I don't know if that, like, they're thinking, oh, this is a limited engagement, so we're allowed to do a clone of a show and have the same star. I don't know. But the guy who created it is also executive producing this one. So, like, how bad
really?
Can it possibly... It can't... Yeah. He seems to be totally into it.
I just... It must be different. Like, it must be the same kind of people, but a different plot or something. Or there's no way... It doesn't make any sense.
I have to agree with you.
I mean, I would be okay with that if they have kind of the same structure of the same people, but then something different happens. That would be okay, I guess. But I'm generally skeptical of American remakes of other shows, because they're usually pretty bad. Tell me The Office. No, don't tell me The Office. It's a totally different show. Can't compare. But I don't know if you guys watched Skins. That was a UK show, and they remade it in America, and they tried to do the same thing. They like cast all the same characters, and the first episode was like a shot-by-shot remake of the pilot. And everyone was like...
Did really bad.
Yeah, everyone was like, why am I watching this? I could just watch the one that already exists that is better. So,
well,
yeah.
To counter that, there was a good adaptation of Queer as Folk. It was a gay drama.
Oh, did they do that in America?
Huh?
Did they remake that in America?
Oh, yeah. It was really good. It ran for five, six seasons.
Yeah, I remember it.
It was... The UK version sucked, from what I hear.
Yeah, I've seen the UK one. It's not great.
Okay. Oh, you got to watch the U.S. one then. I loved it.
Yeah, I bet you did.
By the way, I got yelled at this week. There's a new show on HBO called Looking, and it's like Queer as Folk. It's a half hour. To me, it seems like it's going to be HBO's gay version of Girls, like starring gay guys instead of women. And I called it a gay drama. And of course, I go look in the comments yesterday, and they're like, why do you have to call it a gay drama? Just call it a drama. And I'm like, I would agree with that, but I'm trying to be descriptive in my writing. Like for Breaking Bad, I say the meth drama. Or for Smash, we would say the musical drama.
Yeah.
We're just trying to be descriptive. It's not like gay dramas are the only one where I write gay drama.
Oh my God, Andrew. You're the worst.
And in films, you do that all the time. It's like action. Or, you know what I mean? You change
gay drama in film.
Right.
Don't do that.
Action drama.
I'm saying in the title of an article, you would have a word before that.
Yeah, obviously.
I'm trying to be descriptive. I'm trying to color the article. Man, these comments, kill me sometimes.
We're just trying to give you guys more than like the same title over and over.
We should do a complaint on
the show. It's actually harder than you think.
We should do a segment on the show, like our complaints of the week about readers.
We should do a comments shaming segment where we read out ones and
we point
shame
you
them.
Out.
Let's not do that.
You know, it's like a blessing and a curse. Hyperbole's been growing, and we get a lot of new people. We get the large majority of our audience are not regulars. They're people who come in through search.
Yeah, it's about 76% that are new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's big number. So that's great. But the curse part of it is that we get these people who just want to write smart ass remarks on the comments, and
which is really we've had a great run of not having that many terrible commenters, and I think we're running into that point where we can't. It's impossible to control everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is impossible to control, unfortunately. But, you know, that's what makes it exciting. You never know what you're going to find in the comments.
Yeah. So if you see terrible comments, it's not because we're not trying.
Yeah. I try to avoid the comments, but people leave corrections sometimes, which are helpful. Actually, so sometimes I just have to look.
No, I'm the same. I generally get... arguments against what I write. People like to disagree with what I write, and so I don't read them all the time, but it's actually really funny because every so often, like, my dad, I guess, reads my stuff on Hyperbole, and he like phones me
and he argues with you in the comments.
No, he gives me a report. He gives me a report on the comments, but it's hilarious because he like doesn't know what any of the, like, all the usernames are fandom themed. My dad watches the news. That's like the only show that he watches. So he's like, I don't know what this means. What's shipping? Like, they're very angry. They're very angry about something, and oh, they didn't like this, and they don't. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Dad. He's like, just keeping you informed. So which is cute and also like bizarre.
Speaking of
Merma, what does Pikesar fan 34 mean?
He asked me the other day, what is a destiel? And I was like, oh, Dad. But also, I went home the other day, and my mom had like started fan casting Doctor Who. So she was like, that's in Sherlock, he should be Doctor Who. And I was like, Benedict Cumberbatch? She's like, yeah, I think so. The one that's Julian Assange. I was like, Mom, don't go on Tumblr.
What were you going to say, Josh?
Oh, my grandfather, he's 87 years old, and he sent me an email actually this morning. He said, I read Hyperbole's review of 12 Years a Slave and saw it yesterday on the strength of the review. He said, it was sort of an ordeal to sit through 2 hours of ugliness and torture, but as promised, the film was worth it. I asked the ticket girl if she had 6 years a slave for half the price. She didn't say.
Oh my God.
He's like a big film buff. He always emails me stuff. But he's it's obviously weird, an 80 some year old going on site. And it's always funny to hear what he has to say.
That's great. Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah.
So some other TV news now. Speaking of sequels and spinoffs, The Walking Dead spinoff. It may be a prequel. And it definitely won't be set in Georgia. These new comments came from, well, the thing about it not being set in Georgia came from Robert Kirkman, the comic and television series creator, in an interview with IGN. And TV Line reports that it may be a prequel. They heard that from some of their sources. I really like this idea because apparently they are considering setting it just before the infection, the apocalypse infection starts occurring. And in the show, you'll see them trying to stop it from becoming widespread.
So it's basically World War Z. No, I'm kidding.
I haven't seen it. Is that what happens?
That's basically what happens, yeah.
Okay. I like this idea. I think this is cool because it'll be exciting for us. It'll be a different twist on the apocalypse, and we'll be rooting for them to keep it contained. The only problem is that
we know they're going to fail.
You're right, exactly. So
it's an interesting idea, though. How long was Rick in the hospital again? I was going to say it would be cool to do because he was kind of in the coma after he got shot. So it would be neat to do that. I guess it's a prequel. Do the time that he was in the hospital, because obviously that's when everything happened. So maybe this will take place kind of when he's in the hospital recovering.
And I wrote in this article, we didn't see many flashbacks in this original series, but a couple people pointed out there were some flashbacks in season one, which is correct, but it's not
a lot.
Heavenly.
Because yeah. I watched them all right in a row, so I actually remember most of them, but I don't remember that many flashbacks.
Yeah, no, me neither. I mean, I think this spinoff could also use flashbacks a lot. We could learn the backstory, sort of how Orange is the New Black, the Netflix series, they rely a lot on flashbacks about how people, before people got in prison, what they were up to, which reveals a lot about their character, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember there was a flashback where they showed like a lady in a park, and then you see her later crawling without legs or something in the whenever Rick like comes by the park again. So that I remember that flashback only because it was so weird.
I completely forget season one. It's been so long.
Like I said, I watched I watched like 1 through 4 or 5 in a row. What is it? No, what are we on now?
4.
4. Yeah, so I watched 1 through 3 in a row, and then I started 4 whenever it began.
Oh, okay. Marima, is The Walking Dead popular down there?
It is. I don't watch it, but it is.
Well, isn't Rick is he Australian?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Do I need to check this now?
I think he is Andrew Lincoln. He's not American. I know
he's not American,
right,
because he has a strong
accent.
That narrows
it down.
Oh, is he British? Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's basically the same thing.
It is to Americans. It is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Not American is like just the general.
I always forget. He puts on a great American Southern accent.
He does. Yeah, I remember the first interview I saw him in. I was like, whoa.
Oh, I love that guy. I love that guy. He was in Love Actually. And he was in Teachers.
Did he have an American accent in that movie? Or?
No, that's an English movie. He was in Teachers. That's a good show as well.
I always think it's a shame when they don't use their accents.
You know, I have not seen Love Actually.
I firmly believe that you don't watch movies because you haven't seen Star Wars. You haven't seen Lord of the Rings.
Ah, I'm glad you bring that one up. I watched the first Lord of the Rings this past weekend.
What's the verdict?
I liked it. Yes, I loved it. It was great.
Really?
They hold up pretty well for they're more than 10 years old now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a commitment. You know, it's funny. I actually thought Gandalf died. He comes back, right?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
10 years old.
It's been a while. The reason I thought he died for sure until I looked at the covers of the other two movies.
He does die. He turns in from Gandalf the Grey until Gandalf the White. So he basically dies and comes back.
Oh, ooh.
He like regenerates himself.
He's like quote unquote God of the Lord of the Rings sends him back because he has to help the people of Middle Earth so that they live.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be something lame like, oh, I didn't really die when I fell.
No, he dies. Yeah, because I think he dies as he's fighting the Balrog. He just, there's a scene. Is it in Two Towers? It's the extended in the second film, the extended edition. They show him actually fighting the Balrog after he's fallen all the way through the hole.
So you see
him on this mountaintop.
It's just in the film. It's not in the extended.
Oh, it's just in the regular film?
Yeah, it's like the start of Two Towers. I don't want to ruin it for Andrew. Yeah. He's enjoying it so much.
It's the opening. They wanted to do an opening sequence, and Peter Jackson didn't want to do a recap of the previous film, but they wanted him to show, or they wanted him to write in why Gandalf dies and then comes back.
All of the Lord of the Rings
films.
So you see him kill
the Balrog, and then he. Well, I guess I'm spoiling it for Andrew now, but you see him kill the Balrog, and then he dies too because he's been so damaged from the fall and the fight.
Right. Okay, that's cool.
Yep.
I look forward to that.
Well,
and he actually doesn't quite remember who he is when he comes back. Like, doesn't remember the people he met. So.
Yeah, that's such a good scene. He's like, Gandalf.
He's like,
that was my name.
That's what they used to call me. It's kind of weird. You're like, what?
He's like a 9-year-old with dementia for a minute there. It's true.
Except he's like, what, 1,000? I don't know how old he is.
Andrew, you'll have to report back on Two Towers next time.
Yeah. On the next episode, I will review.
Andrew's Lord of the Rings review 10 years later.
You know what? And some people have suggested, like, oh, why don't you, like, live tweet your first viewing? But that just takes the fun out of it for me. I just want to watch and enjoy.
No one wants to read 2.5 hours of Andrew Sims tweets.
Exactly.
It's not a 90-minute movie.
I'll lose at least 100 followers. Oh, not even 2.5 hours. These damn movies are 3 hours.
So good. So good.
I mean, how long are the extendeds if these are 3 hours?
The last one's almost 4 hours.
They're 3.5 to 4.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I'm not watching those.
They're really good.
Are the first two, I believe.
Yeah, they're really good, the extended.
The extended are, so I think, it's one instance where it actually works.
Yeah, it's one instance where it's not just stuff that's left over. It actually still makes sense.
But you don't feel like the studio was in on it. It was actually Peter Jackson that wanted to get the footage back in.
Right. And then he made The Hobbit and he was changed.
And then he made, someone replaced him.
He worked out what money was.
Does not care about movies anymore.
I think he just calculated the exchange rate from American to New Zealand dollars and he was like, hey.
Well, the thing is, it's like he has, I think it's like $400 million or something from the original trilogy. You can't imagine he's doing anything for money anymore. I just wonder why he would do. I guess the studio controls The Hobbit.
I'm sure it's just like he must have so much fun making them that he's like, I want to do this more, and just for some reason thinks that it was good. I'm sure he thought it was a good movie, the first Hobbit.
Maybe they'll get better.
Yeah, the 3D I don't know.
The trailer was in front of Catching
CGI
Fire.
Now.
Yeah.
Did you notice in the first film in the Fellowship, Andrew, that there didn't seem to be as much CGI? They actually look like real makeups and all that kind of stuff instead of completely CGI scenes. They actually would put people in suits and stuff like that in the trilogy, so it looked a lot more real.
Ah, okay.
Because now, like, whereas in The Hobbit, you're like, everything's so glossy and everything's so perfectly done. You know that it's fake, and I feel like that's a hindrance to The Hobbit.
Yeah, I would agree.
Fair enough.
But I think the next one is going to be good. I saw the trailer before Catching Fire, and I got excited. I have to admit.
Oh yeah,
it's got that barrel scene that everybody's like really excited.
The
about.
Barrel scene is so cool. If you had read the book, you would know this, but that would be asking too much.
That's okay. No thanks.
That's okay. I read the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I'm all caught up.
So, we
had that TV spot with Smog in it. It had quite a bit of Benedict Cumberbatch talking in it. That was good.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Oh, you didn't.
Having seen The Hobbit, I like how when I watched The Fellowship, there's all these hints about The Hobbit, which was cool. I liked that. You know, the Misty Mountain and the dragon. So I liked how there were all those connections.
Yes. Very
I appreciated
good.
That.
Yep.
Very
See,
good.
So there is an advantage of watching The Lord of the Rings after The Hobbit.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. There's
well,
always
it seems
an advantage
much better
to watching
in
that
comparison.
Trilogy. Yeah. Yeah, you're like, holy hell, this is much better.
This is the best movie I've ever seen.
This is better than Catching Fire.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be a big weekend. We not only Hunger Games, but we also have Doctor Who, the 50th anniversary special coming up.
Yep.
So, Kyle's not here to talk about it, but it's a big deal. And we'll have coverage all weekend, particularly on Saturday. I think they're doing like a live, our Doctor Who people are doing a chat either before or after, or both.
I think they're doing during when it is.
Okay, like but aren't they doing like a pre-Google Hangout or something
as
well?
Yeah, I think they're doing like a Google Hangout afterwards, and you can like chat during it. It's so exciting. I'm so excited.
Awesome. Are you going to be a part of that?
No, it's at like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, okay. I don't blame you. Yeah. Kyle's going to be at my place, and I guess I'm going to watch it just so I can say I was a part of it.
Have you ever seen Doctor Who?
No, I haven't.
You've never seen an episode?
No, so, I'm not, like I told you before the show, I'm not into sci-fi.
Yeah,
much.
I've decided to.
Kyle's
going to
be
officially
freaking out, and then Andrew's going to be like, get out of my house.
Yeah.
I'll be like,
and then he'll
I
have
need
no
a beer.
Place to watch
Kyle
it.
Will, yeah, Kyle will be bouncing off the walls, literally.
I'm going to have to calm him down. I don't want to.
Yeah, well, he's got to write
too
articles.
Crazy. Exactly. I don't want his like, articles right. to be like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
They will be there.
They're just GIFs and oh my gods.
Slash, we're also going to Disney later in the day, so he needs to be done at a certain time. Like, we have a hard out. I know. Life's so hard.
Yeah. Oh my God. Such a tough life.
So, check hypo. I don't think we have much to say about it. I guess, Marima, like, what are you most excited about it, this thing? This 50th?
Because they have, like, hardly explained anything about it. They have shown all of these pictures, and they've shown all of these little scenes, but it's still really mysterious what is actually going to happen in it. And because, like, all the doctors are, like, kind of going to be in it in some form. Actually, speaking of, did you guys watch that Doctor Who Hunger Games video?
Yes.
Oh, that was hilarious.
That was
such a good idea to have that come out this weekend.
Oh my God. I can't believe someone hasn't done that before. That was fantastic. But anyway, yeah, the thing with this is it's like there's so much mystery and they haven't really explained any of it. So the way that they've set it up, they kind of have to explain it in this one episode. So that's why everyone is so excited.
Nice, nice. So for once, Stephen Moffat being a troll has everybody excited because they don't know what to expect.
Yeah, well, who knows? He might just be like, jokes. Like, it's not about that at all. This was all fake. All this promo material.
All right. So that's about all we've got for content this week. How about recommendations? Who wants to go first? I always say that because I don't have any.
I don't have one.
I don't know.
Well, maybe since we just did an episode last week, we should skip. We'll skip recommendations.
Yeah, cool.
I did have something. I got to start writing these down because something pops into my head, and then by the time we get to the show, I forget about it.
During the week, I'll think of something, and I'll be like, damn it, I didn't write it down.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't happen to me.
Me too.
I'm not well practiced. Think about it. I'm not well practiced yet.
You just started. Marima is going to be a regular on the show, by the way. I'm happy to say.
Yep.
So get used to it, Marima.
Fine.
And
if
fans.
I have to.
Now, obviously, you're a great fit on the show here, so it'll be great to have you.
Yeah, she
regularly.
Basically just like has an awesome accent, just like Selena. So it's perfect fit.
That's basically my one contribution. And the
She's
weird
She's from,
time
like,
zone.
You know, England or one of those places out of America.
One of those Marima's places.
Marima's a girl outside of this country. You're hired.
Hired with
yes.
an accent.
I'm putting that on my resume.
Girl accent, right. Non-American. Hired.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Enjoy Catching Fire if you haven't seen it yet. And on episode 19, we will be sure to talk about it more, as well as any other stories that broke in the 2 weeks since our previous episode. We won't be back next week because of Thanksgiving, but next time, the first episode of December. So thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Josh Neely.
And I'm Marima White.
Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.